Maurice, you're working on a new book called Why the Earth is Boiling Hot, The Secrets of Gravity. Tell me, how's that going?
It's going very well. I'm still at the research stage, George, and it's the research, I'm happy to say, is complete. What I'd like to do, George, if I may, is just go back to where we left off before we actually get into the new book and why the Earth is boiling hot, which is one of these questions, like the Rutherford enigmas of why doesn't the atom collapse and why doesn't it spring apart? You know, why is the Earth hot in the center? Because nobody understands that. You know, people believe, or science believes, that planets were formed when cosmic dust came together under the influence of gravity into boulders, and the boulders coalesced into larger planetary bodies to form the Earth and the other planets. But the problem with that is nobody knows how the inside of the Earth got hot. But now we know that gravity radiation is electromagnetic radiation. We can understand that sunlight strikes the atoms on the outside of the Earth and heats them up, and the atoms radiate electromagnetic energy. And just the reason I say I'd just like to digress or go back to where we were before I actually address that issue is because a few weeks ago, when I first realized that the atom resembled an electrical generator once I'd turned it into a chestnut-shaped object rather than a billiard ball object, it occurred to me that, and once I'd realized that hydrogen is known to radiate electromagnetic radiation, and that's very, very important, hydrogen is radiating it, I then considered how a more complex atom, for example, like calcium, with 20 positive charges in the middle and 20 electrons and 20 spikes on it, would radiate electromagnetic energy. Because if you remember, Isaac Newton says that the gravity from two objects pulls in the same direction. Gravity from the sun pulls in the same direction as gravity from the moon.
Right.
So I had to reconcile the Newtonian equation of the actual equation is F force is proportional to the two masses, one mass M and the larger mass M, divided by the square of the distance between them. And in order to reconcile Newton's observations, it became clear that the complex atoms were more like tumbleweed. If you imagine tumbleweed blowing down a Wild West town, these 20 electrons are all going in different directions. Some are going up and down, some are going from right to left, some are going from left to right, some are going from... It would tumble, the atom would tumble. And if it tumbles, it wouldn't produce a corkscrew.
Not at all. There'd be chaos everywhere.
There'd be chaos everywhere. So I thought, okay, how can I reconcile this problem? And I knew the key had to be with hydrogen, because the hydrogen, just the proton and the electron, was the simplest, and that was radiating pure corkscrew energy. So I said, okay, hydrogen radiates corkscrew energy. It comes off the North Pole and the South Pole. That strikes the neighboring atom, let's say calcium. The nucleus of those atoms begins to spin. In other words, the corkscrew energy from the hydrogen atom begins to spin the calcium atoms uniformly in one direction. So instead of being chaotic anymore, the radiation from the hydrogen atom spins the calcium atom in the same direction as it is spinning itself. It's like putting a corkscrew into a cork. The cork would turn round if it wasn't in the bottle. It would turn round in the direction of the corkscrew, because that's what you're doing. You're twisting the cork in a corkscrew motion. So what's happening is the atom is not simply a generator. Other atoms, besides hydrogen, are motor generators. So radiation from the hydrogen atom bombards other atoms. The nucleus starts to spin like a motor. The nucleus then starts to generate electricity and radiate it from the North Pole and the South Pole, just like the hydrogen atom. And the two types of radiation pull in the same direction, because both of the atoms are spinning in the same direction. And that's why the radiation from the sun and the moon pull in the same direction. Now we have to say, why does the radiation get weaker in proportion to the square of the distance between the two atoms or the two objects? Now, we have to go back to the hydrogen atom and picture the corkscrew of radiation coming off. And that corkscrew of radiation is not a tube. It's actually like a cone, a V-shape, which gets wider as it radiates. So if you look down on the north pole of the hydrogen atom, you would see radio waves coming off. The corkscrew would get bigger like ripples in a pond. The ripples would go out and out and out and out. And the ripples would get bigger and bigger and bigger as it comes away from the antenna, like a radio transmission. But from the side of the atom, if you looked at the side of it, it would look like a cone upside down. Now, of course, because we're talking about ripples which go outwards from a center, the area of a circle or any particular ripple is proportional to pi r squared. Therefore, as the ripple gets wider, the circle gets wider, the strength of the circle, which must remain constant, is spread over a larger area, and therefore the strength of the attraction must diminish in proportion to the square of the distance traveled by the radiating energy.
And this is proportional all over the universe. Wherever this is used, whatever practicality this might be, it should be the same formula.
It should be exactly the same. And, of course, what's happening now is we've known for a long time that radioactive atoms radiate electromagnetic energy, X-rays, for example, and also they radiate particles, alpha particles and beta particles. But it raises the question, where does a regular atom get its energy from to sustain the radiation of energy? And clearly, as the sunlight strikes the Earth on the outside of the Earth, every atom on the Earth's surface starts to radiate electromagnetic energy like ripples in a pond.
Does that include us, Maurice?
Oh, yes, of course it does. Every single thing which is comprised of atoms. And in fact, it's a very interesting question that, George, because when I first questioned how gravity could work, it was 38 years ago, and I was having a sandwich in a garden in Manchester. And I was eating my sandwich, and I felt somebody was looking at me. And I looked up from the newspaper I was reading, and across the road, there was a girl looking down from a skyscraper at me, drinking a cup of coffee or something.
How did you have that feeling? How did you know?
That was my question. Why did I not look at the flower bed? Then why did I not look at the hedge behind the flower bed? Then why did I not look at the double-decker bus behind the hedge? Why didn't I look at the first floor of the skyscraper, then the second floor of the skyscraper, then the third floor? Why did I raise my eyes from the newspaper, blink, and open them again on the eighth floor at the eyes of the girl who was looking at me?
Straight up.
That was my question. And I thought, how can one thought connect with my brain? How can her thought have impinged on my brain for me to sense it, to feel it? And I remembered Isaac Newton's definition of gravity. Gravity is a force between two bodies. So there was a gravitational force between her and me. And therefore, her brain waves were traveling along that magnetic force into my brain.
That's fascinating. And you picked up on it.
That's when I was 18 years old. And from that moment, I thought, okay, gravity must be radiating energy.